Welcome to Twos Talk with Tosh, Dino, and Donnie.
Fellas, welcome back.
Thank you, Donnie.
Donnie,
good to have you here, as always. Nice and crisp in the studio.
Yeah.
It's way better.
It's not even close.
Yeah.
Good for you guys for coming back. Hey, yeah. What's going on this weekend, guys? What do you got?
Last full team practice. Last time we'll have everybody together this year. We'll have a couple Saskatchewan practices and then Alberta kids in Edmonton. But this is the last time the 2020-2021 version of the traveling teams will get together in the same nice. Weekend.
Might be a bit sad for a few of the girls, eh?
Yeah.
I think, yeah, especially the graduating ones.
Yeah, right? For sure.
Yeah, it'll be good, though.
Yeah, nice. Always nice to have everyone out, for sure.
Hey, just before we get going, ask Dino about the write-up.
Dino, how was the write-up?
Well, I'm a little distracted.
Sure.
So if I am a little subpar today, it's because I heard a song yesterday, and I think it's by the Hunter Brothers or Midland, mm-hmm. right? And they play a tractor. Like it starts off with a tractor starting, and it's got a beat going, and then the song plays, and then the song ends, and then it's like, and then the tractor puts out. It's the coolest song I've ever heard. I know I have it on my phone, and it has to be one of those two groups. I'm sure of it. So
before we go any further, your tractor sound effects need work.
Yeah, it's not very good.
I get what you're saying, but that was rough.
Yeah. Luckily though, you'll introduce our guest, but our guest lives in the same area that the Hunter Brothers are from.
That's true.
He does. He may know.
Okay. Before we get into this,
yeah.
Do you remember a few podcasts ago? It might have been a month ago. We talked about Chips Ahoy cookies and how much smaller they've gotten.
Yeah.
One of our listeners. No. Sent me a package of cookies saying,
come
hey,
on.
Yeah. Kelly really? Thiessen. Yeah. Bless his heart.
Yeah.
Kelly.
That's awesome.
So we do accept gifts here on Twos Talk. Everyone, if you're listening, yeah. if you want to send cookies or whatever, we're willing to take
no,
them.
No, I'm in. Off. I'm off that.
I heard prime rib yeah. is getting a little smaller too.
Yeah. Maybe we should have a look at that. If any listeners out there have any prime rib, let us know. So we got a legendary guest today.
Someone I've
yes. gotten the opportunity to play for the last few years. I play with both of his boys. Fantastic guy. Mr. Jim Jones, welcome to the cast.
Glad to be here, guys.
So, legend is I asked Tosh, I'm like, hey, do you want me to send you his info? He's like, no. Tosh, you want to go tell the story?
He's my hero.
He's your hero.
He's my hero. I remember watching him play. I mean, and hearing all the stories, like, you know, we'll get in some names probably down the road, Jimmy, but I mean, you know, my first year as a senior, A was Saws and Dougie Arnett and all the guys you're really familiar with, right? So they had lots of stories. So it was awesome.
And I was told by his two boys, Corey and Jordy, that there are going to be plenty of stories. So I'm really excited to get into this one. So,
yeah.
Jim, let's start with your start in the game. Tell us about your start in Conquest.
Well, that's a long time ago, guys. I come from a small town, Conquest, Saskatchewan. There's a population of about 200 now. But I started in baseball, and then when I got to be 14, there was no baseball. So it was sitting on the steps of a local cafe, which was just about a half a block from my house. And 7 o'clock in the morning, me and my best friend Jeff McAdam, hoping that the Dirty Doug's Dodgers didn't have enough guys to play in the local tournaments. And a lot of times they didn't. They were out partying the night before, and they weren't going to have 9 guys to go to smaller towns. So they took 2 of us 14-year-olds along, much to the chagrin of our parents, but we still made it out of there, so it was good. And so I started there, and then actually I played with the Maymont 747s, which is Donnie Bates' hometown,
yep. yeah.
and for 1 year when I was 16, and then Bob Stevenson from Outlook started a junior fastball team out of Outlook called the Outlook Junior Elks, and he picked the best, or what he thought were the best kids from probably about 8 different Elks clubs that were surrounded the city or the town of Outlook. And we started our trek in playing. And really, in 1979, I think we had the best team. I still argue this with Donnie Cape on my center fielder with the Automatics for years on who had the better team. But I think we had the better team in 79, but we just didn't win. We weren't there yet. And then in 1980, we finally won the junior provincials and got to go to Canadians in Scarborough, Ontario. But we just you know what, we shot ourselves in the foot and didn't win. And then the next year we had a younger team, but the guys that were coming back, like Lindsay Ogilvy, myself, Jeff McAdam, Artie Paulson, we just decided as the four of us basically that we were going to win, and we did. And we beat the Imperial 400s twice to go, and then we beat QPAR, which was Doug Arnett and Rod Marquardt's team, twice in the final in Rostern, which I used to call was the mini Gordie Howe Park.
That's right.
Their nice porch in right field, which I like too. But but that was my start. And when we went to Canadians in Agent Court, Ontario, we thought we were God's gift to softball. We played Bonanza Steakhouse, which had Dale Gunderson pitching, Ralph Barrington, and we played them in Outlook in a benefit game to allow us to get some money to go. And we lost 7-4, and we said to ourselves, you know what, we're never going to face anybody as good as Dale Gunderson in Agent Court. Well, we faced the Cleveland A's, which was out of Ontario, that had Brad Underwood, Jamie Rora, and Peter Finn as their three catchers. And they pitched four no-hitters in the round robin, and we took them to extra innings 2-1. So, but, you know what, when I got out of there, I went to play college hockey in Camrose, and I got talking with the Camrose merchants and talking to Ray McMillan and doing a sports store there. And I gave my resume one day, and I said, geez, I'd love to come and play in Camrose someday. And he looked at me like, who the hell are you, you know? And I didn't. I ended up going back home, and I played for Arnie's Angels the next year, and I went to the World Series of Fastball in Camrose. And there was Ray McMillan playing for Camrose, and I'm playing center fielder for the Rample brothers as a pickup, and we won the World Series of Fastball. And Brian Weeb pitched, and Irv Briscoe pitched for us, and we just got on a roll, and we had 10 players. So
That tournament was big time at one time. It was awesome. The hill full of people, and you know, it was still going when we were in Camrose. Okay, I didn't know that you played at what it would have been CLC, I guess, at the time, Camrose Lutheran College. Okay, so our stories are just backwards because I went there to play ball and didn't know there was a college hockey team and ended up going to school there and playing hockey. That is wild.
Yeah,
I said I always hit like you and played like you. Now
they probably were so backwards because Jimmy probably found a corner every once in a while.
You know what, Dean? Just as an aside to that, Tosh was asking me about the start and when I quit playing senior A ball, and it was in 1989. And Corey was born in 1989, and I always said that once we had kids, I wasn't going to bring him on the bus because I said that just wasn't the place for kids, although we did have some, and they were great, like Scotty Height. But anyways, we bought tickets to the Memorial Cup in Saskatoon in 89.
Still taking treatment for that.
A young Dean Holine play in that tournament, and we had to come back to Camrose to do a ball camp with Lenny Chinasek, myself, and Saws. And so we missed the final game, so I gave our final game to Daryl Starling and his wife, Penny, to come and watch that final game. And I think you guys went into overtime and lost to Swift Current. So.
It was painful. And we had two breakaways, I think.
Don't say Tim Tisdale's name. He still twitches.
He's still here.
Office skate. One of the prettier goals he's ever scored.
That's right. Yeah. So when you're in Camrose, Jimmy, like maybe rattle off some of the names. Like you talk, was Lenny there then?
When I was there, and when I was talking to Ray McMillan, like Wally Dick was one of the pitchers there. Yeah. Like he had been there, but Ray McMillan was there. Yeah. They were just in the transition then at that time. But I said Ray McMillan was legendary. I watched him at the World Series of Fastball one time. Like off McWillie would grunt, Ray McMillan grunted and put it over the lights and cameras in left field. Like, and Ray would usually strike out or hit a home run, and not just a cheap one either. So it's like, I'll tell you a story about Ray McMillan one time. I'm playing in my first year. I come from Conquest. Pretty naive, you know. I'm 20 years old, and we're up 4-0, and he's playing third base, and I laid a bunt down. And he comes in, almost walks to it, picks it up, and drills me right in the middle of the back on the way to first base. And down I go, and, you know, sliding at first base, and I think Wayne Wallace was at first base, and he said, Jonesy, you don't bunt when we're up 4-0. Nobody had ever told me that. Yeah. So I get around to third, and Ray McMillan's standing there, and he looks at me, and he said, are you ever going to bunt when you're up 4-0 again? I said, no, I'm not, Ray.
No, sir. No, sir, I'm not.
You know, a funny story, when I went out to BC, I actually worked with a company called Regent Communications, and my boss was Ray's son.
You're kidding.
Yeah, it's kind of a small world.
Small world.
It is. It's.
Yeah. You had some legendary
stories.
You look
at the hockey world, Tosh.
Yeah.
I told Donnie I was going to say this to you, but I said, Delisle Bruins always used to kick the Keniston O'Tiger Bruins all the time. And, like, the more people that you meet through hockey that are fastball players or were fastball players or the connection, and I think sometimes in watching Dean play, that hockey mentality comes into play because you don't get intimidated on the diamond.
That's right.
When you're playing the Kiwis and they're doing the hawk or yelling, from the dugout at you, I said, if you can't take that kind of stuff, then you can't perform. So I like the players that have hockey mentality because they're the ones that can double down when you need them to double down.
Yeah. What about today's hockey mentality? A little different.
Oilers need some hockey mentality right now. But that's
amen.
Yeah. It's a little different. We could get away with a lot more stuff back then, for sure.
I believe I still have the text that I sent you a text about something. I can't remember what it was. It was maybe a year or two ago, and you sent back, and you said something along the lines, my favorite Tiger Bruin, or maybe the only one I liked. I can't remember what you said there, but I imagine there were some battles. Yeah.
Oh, there's a couple. Kelly Boysen. Geez, they had one line that was unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, you know the Schmier boys are my uncles, right?
I did know that now that you mentioned that, too, yes.
Yeah, do you want me to stick one of them for you?
In the family tourney?
Yeah.
One's a goalie, isn't he?
They're on my team. Yeah. Lauren was.
Yeah.
He played with Asquith when they went on their role in the...
Bad memories there.
Yeah. He's a guest. So you got your start. Tell us a little bit about your senior career then.
Well, it was funny because... I got a call from John Redekop to play with Arnie's Angels, and I had just decided after Agent Court that I wanted to play better ball, and I had watched Roger Millions on QC8 fastball call it after wrestling, Donnie, on 2 o'clock all the time. I'd watch the games and stuff, and the Saskatoon Merchants, Glenn Zacharias, dad Pete, used to pitch, and I played with Glenn. And I wanted to play there. So anyways, I accepted, and there was quite a few guys. Marty Borson from Hanley come and pitched for us. Jeff McAdam came and played with us. And then a lot of Arnie Ginter, which Robbie's older brother was a classic. And then Bruce Ginter played for us as well. Actually, the guys Bo Wachniak from the Melford 228.
Yeah, I remember. Well, he had a good car.
Starsky and Hutch car.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But, those guys were awesome, and it was really good for me because playing in junior, we never really saw pitchers that could bring it. And then all of a sudden I'm there and I'm going, holy, I need to refine my swing a bit to do it. So the Allomatics had a shortstop named Johnny Green playing for them for 1 year then that played out in Victoria. Yep. So I was playing shortstop, and I was okay but not great. And so I'd come and watch him every game because I thought he was the best. Well, it ended up being that at the end of that season, Johnny Green stayed, and I got a phone call in December and said, and it was Bob Swaski said, would you come and play for us? We need a shortstop. And I was really torn because Barry Rusnell had become one of my best friends, and I'd stayed at his place a lot. And Al Lowen, they were all guys that had played with the Allomatics when they split there with some of those guys. And I didn't know if I wanted to do it. And then Don Funk called me and he said, we're going to New Zealand.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, it's all expenses paid to go to New Zealand. And I'm from Conquest. I've never been outside of Saskatchewan, basically. Yeah. So anyways, I said yes. And it was the best decision I ever made because Bob got named the national team assistant coach.
Yeah.
And we played a schedule against the best teams, that were playing Seattle, Victoria, went to Victoria and then back, and, playing against Robbie Ginter and guys like that, and then also not having to play against Gene McWillie. I always look at Terry Weeb, and Terry played for Tempo.
Yeah.
And, oh, my God, Terry would come up and he'd go like 1 for 6 and one would be just a line drive shot or whatever. And I said, man, if he wasn't playing against Mick every time up here, he'd probably have the best average in the league.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
But you know what? That just propelled me into it. And then I think at the time I was young and, I could run and I could hit. I wasn't the greatest fielder, but I said, if you can hit, they'll find a spot for you.
Yeah.
And,
heard that before.
So then
somewhere?
It just, the way it went. So
Jimmy, I remember you, obviously, who you were and back in the day when I was playing junior, but did you do you ever remember facing me at all? Like, I don't remember facing you. Like, I try to think about it. I remember, I know I was at the park a lot of times when you played, but I couldn't remember if I'd actually thrown to you or not. I was wondering.
I don't think I have, Dean, as, like, I remember your dad quite well, and how your dad had started that program up with you guys. And this is really ironic as well, too, is because when I moved to Alberta and Corey was born or whatever, like when we lived in Conquest, he was our bat boy when he was 3 years old. And he was, you know, mimicking the pitchers like Donnie Bates and guys like that and how they pitched when they were young. And to me, the bat boys are the guys that turn into the good ball players because they're watching the game and the rest of it. And Corey was pretty studious that way. So when he was like five, I decided, you know what, I'm going to start coaching and build a team in Leduc. And and I thought about your guys' team out of Melfort when you guys won the midgets and and the juniors. And I thought, you know what, I can do this, but I got to try to keep the same group moving up and in Leduc. And we did. And what I did is I went and picked kids that were really good athletes and parents that were really good parents and good friends of mine. Mm-hmm. And what ended up happening, as soon as I showed them what their kids could do at a young age, they were caught, and I could do whatever we wanted with them, and we would fundraise to go to Saskatoon for tournaments. And Johnny Boyle, Donnie, said to me one time, he was a baseball player, and I wanted to get him bad because he was such a good athlete. And I said, Johnny, I need you to play on our team. What's it going to take? And he says, we got to take a bus trip. And I said, we're going to Saskatoon. He says, I'm in. But that's like your dad doing that. Scotty Glenn's dad, Doug in Camrose, you know, went through the whole program where 10 years he taught his kids. And I think guys that played good softball, and they give those kids a leg up on what they know a lot sooner than what they traditionally know.
For sure.
Yeah, I actually got the pleasure of playing for Doug a couple years in Camrose too, and what a great guy. And his two kids are just great, great guys, great athletes, worked hard. Hardest working two guys on the team always.
Scotty might have been our bat boy at one time.
He might have been.
Yeah. No, and that's a shot at Scotty, obviously. But
I mean, he's listening for sure.
It's actually a shot at you.
Yeah, that's true. So Corey, obviously, if it's like Dino, you bring a reference back to Doug. So Corey got to play every game like Dean did because his dad was a coach. Is that how that works? Or that's a little later in the cast picking on you.
Yeah, what's
the
time, Donnie? Yeah.
The time is 17 minutes, guys. Right, well, that's the over-under on that one today.
For 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You know what, you guys, as Donnie will attest to this, is when I coached, is I've told all the players that they have to play two positions.
That's a story.
You have
up.
To have two positions that you're comfortable with, because if you can, then I try my best. If you sat one game, you'll play the next. Yeah. And it may not be at your preferred position, but it's at the next position. And I tried my hardest to do that. When we got into the big games or whatever, I felt it was my duty and responsibility to put our best nine out there when we needed to win. And sometimes, guys didn't get to play quite as much then, but I hope that they realized that at the time and the rest of it. But like Dean's, and it is a thing there, but usually Corey pitched or he played first base. And then all of a sudden when we started to go senior A, when Donnie and Millie talked me into coaching and them going senior A, as I said to Corey, okay, he had hurt his arm playing hockey, and I said, you're probably not going to pitch, so you got to find another place. So he got reasonably comfortable in outfield. And, that was huge, because when you can always get another bat in the lineup, then away you go, and it doesn't matter. So I had a good friend of mine, Kevin Lockwood, from Conquest one time. His daughter plays for G-Force in Saskatoon, and he said to me, he was staying at my place, and they were playing in Leduc one night, and he was complaining because Allie was – you know, she's second base one game, she's shortstop the next, then she's in outfield. And I said, so what are you whining about? And he goes, well, no, she's a second baseman. And I said, you know what, Kevin, as long as she's in the nine, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. That's right. That's a great point. You know, we've had that too. Even we've had players, I've had, you know, and I'm not going to name them, obviously, because there's been a few, but come up and say that my daughter's like the DP. And I'm like, well, yeah. Well, it's not a real position. Well, it's better than left bench, right? You know. So I.
But I got.
No,
great,
they got to know. Hold
I got a great. I got a great. Story.
I know. All but right. People got to know.
They got
to
know.
We're listening to your coach right now. Mm-hmm. What are Donnie's two positions?
Go ahead.
You know what, Donnie? This is really funny about Donnie.
Oh, here we go. We can edit this too, everyone, just in case.
Like Don. When we decided to start the Grand Prairie Pirates, it was for a whole bunch of different reasons. But the Lloydminster Dodgers were probably the best senior B team in Western Canada for maybe 5 years running. And anyways, Millie came to us and he said he'd really like to hold the Canadians in Grand Prairie. And he said, I applied, Jim, and I didn't get it. And he said, can you help me get it? And so I developed a plan up, and Donnie and I and Millie and I think Corey sat down one time downtown Edmonton at a bar, and they asked me what they would do. And I said, one, I said, you have to get a presence in Senior A. So you have to play Senior A. You got to quit playing Senior B. If you want to play Senior B, then play Senior B. But I said, there's lots of guys that always said they could play Senior A. Donnie Capon and I used to say this all the time. But there's very few guys that will commit to do it.
Yeah.
And the guys that commit to do it are the ones that either move on or, you know, you get to talk about. And some, based on where their life has taken them, they just can't do it. But Donnie was driving in from Lloydminster to Edmonton to play virtually all the time or wherever it was. He was organizing the team. He was trying to do the sponsorship and all the rest of it. So we're talking, and Donnie didn't want the game to go from the Lloyd Dodgers to Grand Prairie. And I said, so we have to get going. And I said, Millie's got to be the money man. He's got to find the money. And I said, we're not going to pay anybody. And I said, we want hotel rooms for all of our players when they go on the road somewhere. And Millie says, I can do that. And Donnie looks at me and says, I can't do that. He goes, and I said, that's why you need to say, okay, let's do it and let's get our group of guys. I was afraid at that time, having watched all these guys play and how much fun they had. And Donnie is that guy that makes it fun to play. He's probably the best one-liner I've ever heard in my life.
Oh, Jim, bless you.
He's a great glue guy, and anybody that's played hockey knows what a glue guy is, and that's the guy that holds the team together. I got to tell you this story about Donnie.
Oh, no.
Lee Stupar is one of Donnie's best friends and just a great glue guy, too. We're in Kelowna, and we're playing the national team, and we know we're probably going to get beat up or whatever, so we're not pitching our best pitchers and the rest of the stuff. So Donnie's in the bullpen, and he's catching or whatever. So anyways, Team Canada's up on us like 8 or 9-0 or whatever. And I had told Lee Stupar to go down and start pitching. Well, Lee hadn't pitched very much. And he says to me, Jim, there's no way that I'm pitching against the national team. And I said, no, I just need somebody warming up here in case something happens or whatever. So anyways, when Lee gets nervous, he starts smoking cigarettes like a crazy. Anyways, he says, I got to go to the bathroom. So he heads to the bathroom. I go to Donnie and I said, okay, Donnie, get your stuff on. And I said, go stand out there and like you're going to warm up. And when Lee comes back, we're all going to go, Lee, I need you in there because it's probably going to be 12-1 or 12-2 from the time he comes back. So anyways, he comes strolling back along King's Stadium there. He comes back, and Hall Dane is one of the guys in the dugout. He's gone. He says, Lee, hurry up, get back here. And Lee starts running a bit, and he goes, what's going on? He said, Jimmy wants you in. He said, you know, Scotty can't pitch anymore. He's got to go out there. And Donnie's sitting there, and like, he's just selling it like crazy. Like, Lee's looking around, what the heck's going on? He said, I can't do this. Whatever. And anyways, Lee comes around the corner and goes to grab his glove, and everybody just bursts out laughing here. Like, so what Donnie brought to our team was just that. Donnie is a good batter, and he could bat, but I went to him one year, and I said, Donnie, you're too heavy.
Mm.
I said, you need to drop a few pounds here, because I said, you hit the ball hard, and when you hit it hard, I said, you don't run that well, and it's a double play. So I said, can you drop some pounds? So the guy goes, he drops like 40 or 50 pounds, gets bulked up in the top, and I go, like, can you run any better, though? That's what I want to know. So, but you know what? He did, like, he sucked it up sometimes there. He never played as much as what he could have or should have. Or if he'd have been playing with the Dodgers and we'd have been playing Senior B, he'd have been playing all the time. So it was that kind of stuff, and Lee Stupar was the same. Is I always said to guys is that we need to go in to play Senior A ball with our eyes wide open. And eyes wide open meant this, is we hadn't played Senior A, and I said there were going to be some times when we were going to get beat really bad. And like, was Donnie in the national team, or no, we called Newfoundland the national
team. They were pretty well, yeah.
We played them in Saskatoon, and we were down 9-0 after our first bat. And everybody's down or whatever, but we score 8 in the bottom of the inning, so it's 9-8. Wow. Well, same thing. We needed to play Nova Scotia and win, so we're holding back our better pitchers, and they ended up beating us 16-8 in 5 or whatever. But we could always hit. It's just whether we could do the rest. So,
I gotta say, kudos. Here's a great Jim Jones story. So when, like Jim was saying, when the Dodgers went to the Pirates, we had to get a little bit more serious, obviously.
Yeah.
We were going to Kelowna for May Days, and the weekend before, Jim calls a practice in Leduc, and everyone shows up. And for the first 40 minutes, we ran and ran and ran. And we were all like, Jesus, what are we in, peewees? Like, what's going on here? So we're dying. Everyone's like doubled over. And Jim pulls everybody out. And this is the Corey story, because Corey Jones hits the ball a mile. And I don't care where he plays. Like, we need him to play somewhere. But we had five first basemen. So Jim goes to everybody. Where do you play? And Stupar's the best. I play first. And Jim's like, well, where else? He's like, well, nowhere. He's like, I pitch, I guess. Like, good enough. Then he goes to Corey. Where do you play? And he's like, first. And he's like, you're going to have to learn the outfield. And Corey's turned into a good outfielder.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So that's the kid who's on the national team. He smashed the ball, and at senior A, had to learn a new position and has done very well. But he went through everybody. Nobody was above it. It was going to be, you got to play either two spots.
So what was your answer? What was your answer then?
So I play third, and yeah. I can play first, but we already had five of those. So yeah. I settled into the DP role. The thing that Jim mentioned, though, is from the Dodgers to the Pirates, we had a lot of talented guys, obviously. It's tough to make the lineup. But if you were a role player like me, you had to settle into that role and know when your number was called.
Yeah.
You got to be ready to go. You can't sit around saying, well, I should be playing. I was happy to be there with the guys, and whenever I got a chance to do something, I tried my best, obviously. But like Jim said, I was the guy on the bench who Jim on several occasions had to remind me to tone it down a bit. But that was part of my part of what I bring to the group, and it's a talented group. And Jim, like, we did a great job getting us into nationals and putting our name out there for sure. But that's my favorite Jim Jones story. Was we ran like we were in – I don't remember running like that since I was in Camrose in minor. It was crazy.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, that I think that's, you know, you talked about it, Jimmy, about the mentality of playing senior A. I think that becomes the mentality because you need guys to be role guys. And I considered myself a role guy. Like, you know, I could play different positions, that sort of thing. And I think that's really important. And I see, you know, if I think back or we think back to some of the teams that were really, really good, there was role guys. There was guys that knew their role. And as a coach, again, just going on the other side of it now, as a coach, I think that's probably the most important thing that you can do with your team is let them know what their role is going to be, ask them if they can accept it, and when they do, it's a done deal.
Move on.
Yeah, because if something happens down the road where they're not accepting their role, well, you agreed to do this role. You know, and I think that goes through every level. Like, we see it even in our twos program, you know, like there's different roles you have to accept because, you know, we've talked about it before. You got five shortstops trying out, right? Well, only one can be on the field at a time. So
here's another Donnie Speed story that Jim will remember. So we've talked about Scott Glenza face on this podcast where if I do something stupid, I get this look from Scott where it's like, come on.
Yeah.
So we're in Kelowna, and I know Corey Jones is probably laughing. He tells me this story every time I see him. We're in Kelowna. We had to go to West Bank because there was rain in Kelowna, and the West Bank has like a stadium, wooded walls. It's really nice.
I played there.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And we're playing a Fleetwood junior team, and they're all right, and it's a pretty close game. And I hit a ball, which I thought might have went over the fence, but it hit the top of the fence.
Oh,
so I didn't quite – well, it doesn't matter. I'm not fast anyway, but yeah. I didn't quite bust out of the box maybe like I should have. I got thrown out at second base by 8 feet, and it was terrible. And I got the Jim Jones face on the way back to the dugout, and it was just like, oh. And then we had Devin McCullough and a few guys, and no one said a word on the bench, and I sat down, and Devin's like, hey, pretty close. I was like, ah, never going to live it down. It was tough.
Yeah. Hey, Jimmy, so let's back into your playing career here, like, because I think, you know, we get a lot of people that talk about on the cast about hearing some of the stories of the back in the day, so that, you know, the 80s and who would have been some of the top players that you were with or around that time, you know, national team, obviously, you know, Rempel went on a run in 87. Give us some insight as to some of the guys. And if I know you're probably going to say Saws, but whatever.
I lived around the corner from Saws.
Yeah.
When I lived in Beaumont, Alberta. So like he is, Ryan Cisnowski is maybe the best hitter.
Yeah.
I've ever seen in my life. And he was always the guy that when we played against him, we didn't want to see him coming up when there was guys on base.
Mm-hmm.
And none of the pitchers liked pitching to him because he'd drive it to the middle all the time. So it was always coming back to the middle. But, like, I look at and I shake my head, you guys, in 83 when I was 21 and made the national team the first time with the All-Star group that had made it. We had 43 guys that go to Waterloo for the tryout. I look at the guys that made that team. So, like, here I am, pl- platooning in left field with Marty Kernighan. And I'm going, nice. I had no right to platoon in left field with Marty Kernighan, that he should have been left field or shortstop wherever he wanted to play at that time. But Reg Underwood played center. Dennis Eckerd was in right field. Barry House was at first. Grant Skinner was at second base. Bob McKinnon, Brian Cisnowski were at shortstop. Bob Shelston and Rob Menzies were catching. Pitchers McWillie, Ginter, Mark Smith. You know, Mark Smith was the same age as I am, and I always joked with him because Mark Smith had already won two ISCs by the time he was 21. And I could barely get into the Conquest bar by that time. So, like, it is just, I look at those guys and I call them the legends of softball. Like, I did a post here on Facebook a while back on Barry House was my roommate at the Pan Am Games, or even actually not at the Pan Am Games, but in the tryout. So here's Barry House is 12, 13 years older than I am. I'm 21. I come into the room, I shake hands with him, and I said, "Hi, I'm Jim Jones." And stuff, and we're talking away, and I'm telling him, "Man, I saw you hit a mammoth home run in the World Series of Fastball there, and the rest of this stuff. I heard you put a bat underneath a catcher's chin one time when the pitcher threw close to you, and stuff like that." And he says, "I know who the hell you are, Jim." He says, "Sit down here and let's talk about something we can talk about." But he kind of put his arm around me, and he said, "You know what? You're going to be all right." And I said, "I'll help you through this." He started including me in the conversations with his buddies, which made me feel more comfortable, which made me be better. And I always think about that. I was sitting underneath the bulletin board, Glenn Ford and I, and Barry House, seeing who was going to make that team. And House went back to his the room after, and Fordy and I sat there. And finally, at 4 in the morning, it was supposed to be posted at noon, or at by midnight. Yeah. They hadn't decided yet, so I went to bed. I get up at 6 o'clock, and I'm there with one of the things. So I run back in the room and I wake him up and I go, "Roomie." And he goes, "What, Jonesy?" And he says, "We both made it." And he says, "Good job, Roomie." And he turned around, went back to sleep. And I looked at him at that time and I said, he knew that he was going to make that team. Yeah. I said, "How did he know? Well, like, who are you going to turn down, Barry House or Jim Jones?" Like, so like, those are just special times for me, because to me, I was there and I would do anything I want. Like, Dave Pierce was the head coach, and Dave Pierce could write the best. I'm sure Dino, you probably, your dad was probably using him as a resource back when you were there too, but he could write a technical manual better than anybody I've ever seen in the world, and he could do it. But when he was coaching, when he got between the lines, he was in trouble. And that's where Bob Sawatsky and Terry Bader took over and did so well. But you know what, they cut Jeff Boyce. They cut Bill Lunny, and those guys were great pitchers. And Brad Underwood didn't even try out because he was playing in Midland at that time and couldn't get out of a sponsorship that McArdle Pontiac had him on there too. But those are, to me, the best guys. But you know what? Every team that I've played on have good players and have good guys.
Yeah.
You know, like I went back when I worked for Softball Alberta, and I quit playing, and I went out to Roleyview because I lived on an acreage out by Roleyview outside of Leduc, and I started playing with Dustin Grahams and a few of those guys. And you know what? Like, I wanted to go out because I worked 14 hours a day in the summer, and I'd go out and I'd show up at 6:45. I really didn't want to play. I just wanted to have a beer with the guys after.
Yeah.
And they're penciling me in, and I'm going, "You guys, I really don't want to play." And they go, "Jonesy, you got to play."
Yeah.
And a lot of it was they felt they were better when I played. And I look at when I see Tosh and Dino, when you guys play with the 222s. And, like, you guys are legends. So I said, when you walk on the diamond, you bring a sense of calmness to you. Tosh, I seen you make that stupid play behind the back that killed us in that one game where you come running in on a bunt down the first baseline and you grab it and throw it behind your back and it hits the guy at first base. And everybody's giving you the barbs, but I don't think that was the first time you've ever done that. So
first time with my eyes open. But, you know, you're right, Jimmy, because, I mean, and it's, you're bringing up some names that, you know, we're still – obviously playing when we were still playing.
That'd be a good hockey team too.
Oh, it'd be a good hockey team, yeah. But, I mean, Barry House, I mean, I have similar memories because we had him in 91 in Camrose when we hosted Nationals. and you know, Clark Bosch and Saws and him and Bonesy, and you know, it was just a bunch of legends you got to play with. And I don't know if there is another guy that's more intimidating than Hauser when he's standing in the box. Like, he was just, you know, just so intimidating. And but yeah, I could sit here all day and listen to the stories, because those are, you know, those are guys that, you know, we got to play with at the tail end, but those are the guys that, you know, we got to grow up watching. They were our heroes, right? Like,
yep.
You know, and I wasn't kidding. I mean, you definitely were, you know, one of the best players, not only in Saskatoon, but in the country, when, you know, we were just starting to come through the system. But yeah, I Saws is funny too. And I know you and I have had conversations about him in the past as well. And I don't think my career does what it does without him. Like, I learned so much from watching him, and you know, how many times did he basically, you know, pull himself to the plate on two bad hammies and then hit one off the wall.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just, it was amazing to be able to witness that firsthand.
Here's a fun Jim Jones fact for you. In one of those many times I was driving from Lloyd to Edmonton to play ball, this Leduc 747s and the Lloyd Dodgers basically played, they were the top two teams in that league for 8 years in a row. And it was mostly our men's team combined, so we split them up so we had some competition. And Leduc had probably more talent than we did, but we had better. We had Scott Glenza, we had Brian Graham, we had better arms, but maybe. But they always came with usually eight, maybe nine. And so they came with eight one game, and I hear Corey talking to Jim on the sidelines, and I'm kind of snickering, and Jim's wearing shorts and running shoes. And he's like, well, we need a ninth. I'm like, oh, here we go. So John Spigot's catching for us, and he's one of my best friends. I love Spigot, and he's got a pretty dry sense of humor. And it's a close game. Jim put himself lower in the lineup for whatever reason. Probably should have batted fourth. But first pitch Jim saw, he hit it 400 feet.
Off of who?
Off of Scott Galenza, I think.
You got to mention that, man.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to rub it in Scotty's face.
It wasn't Scott. I would never put myself in against Scott at my age.
I don't want to do it now.
I don't know his name. The big tall guy from Dewberry or whatever out that way.
Oh, Kyle Braithwaite.
No.
I was going to say, it's not Richie Haldane, is it?
Oh, Daner's wearing it again.
No.
I'm not remember who it was.
Yeah. Oh, Rich, I'm sorry.
Oh, was it Tyson?
No.
Hmm.
His brother was on the team. They're from Edgerton there, weren't they?
Oh, Adam Taylor.
Adam Taylor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Throw real hard, but real straight.
I had the guys from Stoned Rangers running over to me wanting me to play Masters.
Of course they did.
I said, no, I'm not interested.
But all I remember was playing third and watching this ball sail into the twilight, and I can hear John Spigot from behind plate going, come on! I'm like, oh, here we go. So one
There's
pitch.
A beauty, nice. John Spigot.
Oh, what a fantastic guy. Yeah, best man at my wedding. Can't have a better guy than John Spigot.
There you go. Hey, I got
his dad, though, like Barry. Like, I played ball with him with the Cal Palace Cobras in Outlook when I was, like, 18. And Barry was a gamer, too. Like, I know you probably know, because he would sit and watch John and Bobby played for us in midgets there and talk about a hockey mentality. Like, he caught for us, and he really helped our 747s team, Bobby did.
Because, yeah, he did.
I always said to him, he was sandpaper, and we didn't have a lot of sandpaper on our Leduc 747s. We were good guys, and we didn't want to push the envelope. Bobby pushed the envelope.
Like, did, yeah.
He'd be tell Corey, well, you got to hit more guys, Corey. And Corey says, I don't hit guys. He said, I just pitch and the rest of the stuff. And he would chirp at the other players. And he was like Dwayne Height.
Oh, geez.
Dwayne Height used to, he was a great addition to our team. And we'd be riding the bus from Saskatoon to the break and play break and clutch in Calgary. So we're on the bus for 6 hours on the Blue Goose. And we'd get to Calgary, and who does spot Peter Clark put in at first base is Height. So he's chirping at the ABC bench the whole first time, and he did it on purpose because that got us into the game, you know, because they'd be yelling at us to go to you know what, and we'd be yelling back at them, but it got us in the game. And Spot always said otherwise we'd have slept through that game because we were coming off the bus
for sure. I can't believe this podcast is on almost, well, 8 months, nine months,
yeah.
And that's the first time Rook has made the cast. Out of all the stories that around that guy, it's the first time he's made the cast.
See, people never had to pay him. That's why they liked having him on the team, because he was a comedian, and he just raised his own money on the bus. Guys would chip in. He just
wouldn't
stop
talking.
Hey, I
got a classic story on Rook here, you guys.
All right.
Rook was playing for K&K Olsen, and Buddy Combries was pitching. And Bunny's, I think, is his brother-in-law or something, or related. Anyways, Rook's catching, and we're playing him, and Jerry Dickey had hit a couple of long moon shots out in Waldheim against them. And I don't know why we were playing out in Waldheim, but anyways, Rook forgot his glasses, and he couldn't see, so Bunny's throwing, and he can't see the ball, and he's not catching it, so it's dropping, so Bunny's getting mad at him. So Bunny gives Rook his glasses so that he can see the ball. Well, then somebody was stealing, and Rook couldn't see him, so he was throwing at the runner going to second instead of to second base. So, like, it was just hilarious. Like, it was, like, we all bug him about that afterwards, and he, like, he is such a good guy, and yeah. when you talk about a good teammate,
yeah.
that's what he is. He just wants to win, and he'll do whatever the team yeah. has to do to win. Yeah. And, like, when we played against him, I said I used to hate him because, like, he would always rock the boat and the rest of the stuff, but what a great teammate.
Yeah.
Well, and, that, and I think that that's part of the game that's probably missing right now too, right? Like, there was probably, you know, more dust-ups in the special men's league in one season than there is now in 2 or 3 years at the senior A level, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of dust-ups, let's bring this up now because it's come up on the past cast where it was our second – Jim's first-year coach in the Dodgers were at Westerns in Saskatoon. For whatever reason, we're on Glenn Reeves' diamond and we're playing Delisle, which happens to have you guys on it.
Oh, yeah.
If you remember.
Yeah.
And Lee Stupar's throwing that game. Another move – a shrewd move by Jim.
You guys beat us.
We did. Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Oh, okay.
So, first off, let's start with this. Ryan Friedrich, who coaches with me, and he's maybe one of the smartest players I've ever played with. Really brilliant guy. He's catching Stoops, and he comes up to him, and he goes, hey, when Dean comes up, put the ball right here. And he pointed, like, towards his hands. And Stupar's like, I'm not going to throw him that. He's going to hit that 600 feet. And Ryan's like, yeah, but I bet he can't keep it fair. Let him hit it into the trees. Foul. And first pitch, sure enough, Dean hits it into the campgrounds. And Stupar's melting down, looking for a dart for sure. But it never hit him run off him, thank God. But we're up pretty early in the game. I think Newton's throwing for you guys.
Yeah.
And we hit a couple home runs, and there was a play at the plate where Todd Aldred and Brian, they don't get along at all. And he slid at the plate, and Newton yeah. claimed he spiked him, and then it kind of got a little heated. And we're a little bit intimidated by you guys. You got you two and Weeb and your brother and Eats, and like, it was a pretty big group of guys. Yeah. So as any veteran team would do, you guys start kind of maybe chirping back at the umps a little bit and getting a little bit wild. And none of us could say anything. We didn't know what to do. And Jim storms across the diamond and starts maybe laying into you guys in the umps a bit. And it was the most proud moment I've ever been in my life. Like, my dad came to bail me out of a jam. It was awesome.
Yeah, because he's been a part of that forever. Yeah. Like, he knew what was going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there was some – yeah, I remember you guys. It, like – You guys had a really good team. So that step for you guys to go to senior A was just a logical step.
Well, and honestly, like I did run that team quite a bit, and then Jim came in to coach, and we needed that. But we wouldn't have taken that next step without Jim making. We were a professional team when the Pirates started. Yeah. We were for sure the most fun team in the Beer Gardens as the Dodgers, and we were competitive and we won lots of games. We didn't have that leader at the top who would keep us all in line, and that certainly isn't my job. My job's to be fun. And it's hard to be fun and be strict at the same time. And if anyone knows Jim, there's no crossing lines there for sure. It's very business. Yeah. On the diamond, we are business. You can have a couple beers after the game, but no, there's no monkeying around. Everybody towed the line when Jim came on. It was a huge move for us.
Don't lose a tournament in the beer tent.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Do you know what? I remember that game, Donnie, really well, because I remember Dean being at third base, and the third base umpire had called a strike, which was a strikeout for the next guy coming up. So Dean is just all over this umpire at third base. And, like, I don't know who the umpire was.
We were just talking.
Oh, no, you were all over him. And anyways, you were saying, how can you make that call? That is a terrible call. Like, you can't see that from here. And I'm going, yes, you can. That was a great call. You know, and you're going back, no, it wasn't. It was awful. No, I said, I think that was a great call. You know, we're going back and forth like that. But
But that's the way it was.
Yes.
Oh.
That's the way it should be.
To this day, probably one of the most intense games I remember being a part of. Here's the funny part, and this is a tribute to Dino here. So Newton, and he throws hard. He has a good changeup, but we see him all the time. So we hit a few home runs, and we're up a bit, and then they bring in Dean from the bullpen, and it's amazing how quickly all the chatter on our side
just stops.
Yeah. It was a library in there on our dugout, for sure. Nobody wanted to wear a bowling ball on the back.
Well, there was 2 years ago, I won't mention any teams or anything, but it was the same kind of situation where playing a – playing a team, and we played C's as a Masters team. We played C's, and we got some grief for playing C's, but we're all like, we're 50 years old.
Yeah.
Like, what's the difference, right? We just want to play some games, and Patty got drilled, and shouldn't have. Like, basically, it was thrown at him kind of thing. And I'm at second base, and I can't remember who was playing second, and I'm not going to drop any names anyways, but he started popping off, and all I did was and you were pitching.
Yeah.
And all I did was look at him and say, our guy throws it way harder than your guy, bud. And I think you're leading off the inning, aren't you? And that was it.
Are you sure I do, though? maybe you're not in the right era.
Maybe.
Yeah. They're going to be like, do you not know how hard he's not throwing right now?
Yeah. So, Jimmy, talk a little bit about your time, because we were in Alberta around the time. So when you took the gig with Softball Alberta, talk about that a little bit too, because that's one thing. You know, we've had Scott on here, president of Softball Canada. Just we really don't talk about the admin side very often. But seeing as you're, you know, former national team player going into that admin role, what kind of adjustment was that?
It was good. Like, that was a role that when I went to university, that's the job that I wanted. Mm-hmm. When I was there, and I remember being in Calgary playing one time, and Wilda Wenstrom was the president of Softball Alberta at the time, and I met her after whatever, and she said to me, she said, you know, we have an opening for an executive director for Softball Alberta, and I said, I'd love that position, and she said, well, put in an application. So I got it. I had been on the board for Softball Saskatchewan for a couple of years before that. I had applied for a provincial coach position with Softball Saskatchewan and didn't get it. At that time, Erna Wicks was the registrar or lady that ran Softball Saskatchewan. And anyways, when it came up, I took it, and my wife Lynn and I moved to Edmonton and did it. And it was, you know what, it was good. We'd four times a year have 17 people come from all across Alberta, and we'd meet on slow pitch and fast pitch. And at that time, it was a personal goal of mine to make boys fast pitch a lot more pronounced, and we had some really good teams, like Lyle Norman out of Calgary had a good team, Paul Kolodinski out of Edmonton, where Ryan Friedrich played, had a good team, Calu, who had always had a good team, and Emil Burby and Shelley Burby used to, you know, coach those. So I said it was great competition for kids in mites and up, and so it was okay. It was, sometimes it helped me a lot because I had the senior A mentality, and we were dealing with the Grand Prairie Pride and who were bringing in players and
cheaters,
Evan Potkins of the world and the rest of the time. When I phoned him one time, I phoned him right up and said, Evan, where are you living? And he goes, well, in Prince George. And I said, well, you've got down here that you're living in Lac La Biche. Yeah. He said, oh, no, I'm in Prince George. Well, that's a pretty easy decision. Yeah. You're not eligible. So, but, you know, kudos to Michelle Patria that's still there, is because she was a lot of the one that was doing the hound dogging and that kind of stuff on where people were living. But we traditionally didn't have to do that. The Lloyd Liners were a challenge when they played, and I was the executive director through that because Mike brought in a lot of good players. And they met the requirements of being there, and they worked and ran the ball diamonds and the rest of the stuff. But they brought in some really good players. The Colin Abbotts, Dave Norris from who I coached midget hockey in Delisle was playing there and was a fantastic hitter and stuff. But Dustin Grahams went there and played after. Yeah. So, you know what? It was a good time for fastball. When I went to Edmonton and I played in the Edmonton Men's League, there was 81 teams in men's fastball in Edmonton.
That's crazy.
So, they were good times, but really good people to work with. I remember the first board meeting I went to in Red Deer. 17 of the 19 people at that board meeting smoked.
Oh.
And myself and Brenda Fazer from Red Deer didn't.
Yeah.
And Brenda said at the end of the meeting that she couldn't continue as a board member unless they quit smoking during the meetings.
Yeah.
And I stood up and clapped my hands. And anyways, they quit. We would always break and go for smokes after that or whatever, whoever wanted to.
Yeah.
And like, I'd have to literally put my clothes in the washer as soon as I got home and drop them because it was like working a bingo.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, we all remember those.
Well, not for nothing. You used to be able to smoke on airplanes. So
that's
true. The board meeting's not that out of the...
I got a question because I don't know if these guys raised their eyebrows or not, but as soon as you said this, I was like, okay, Who got the job ahead of you with Softball Sask as far as a provincial coach?
Randy Poole.
Wow.
He was a kid out of I was still in my last year at Rec Tech at Kelsey, and so I was applying and had permission that if I got the job, I would have taken it.
Yeah.
But one of the questions they asked me, are you going to quit playing Senior A ball? And I said no.
Yeah.
And so I think that was part of it.
Right.
But they ended up giving it to Randy Poole. I think he was there for a couple of years or whatever. So
when you were at Kelsey, did they still have the hockey team going?
Yeah.
Did you play hockey too?
That's a long story, but I played two weekends with them I played two weekends to get ready to play senior hockey in my hometown. Actually, we played STI and beat them both times, and I had goals in every game. And, of course, Brian Schnitzler was the head coach then.
Yeah.
And Brian says, you got to come play for us. And I said, you know what, Brian, I had offers to go play in Lanigan for money and some other places, but I'd have been killed if I went home and played for them instead of playing for my hometown team. So
the Amarex,
and I had more
right?
fun doing that too. So
the Amarex, wasn't that their name? Yep, Kelsey Amarex. Yeah.
My buddy, did you play there, Dean?
No.
Jim Reset was a good friend of mine. He played goal for the Amarex at that time too. So.
Oh, okay.
They used to come on. We were playing midget AAA in Saskatoon at the Downtown Arena. They used to come on right after us. They had practices right after us. I remember that, and that's why I remember the name.
Yeah.
Jim, I had a special request for a question from one of your boys.
Our first call in.
Yeah, first time caller.
First time caller.
And I know you kind of talked about it a little bit, but if you could just, he wanted to know who the best position players you've ever played with were.
Oh, that's, like, I always, you guys, like, Donnie Capon and I became really close friends. Like, it was funny because Donnie played with the Automatics in the role that probably I thought I was going to play when I started. He ran bases, he was a terrific base runner, fast, and he would run over the catchers at that time or whatever he had to do. He'd play defense and didn't get to play that much. And so the first year when I come up and I start playing and I'm hitting, like, Donnie's not playing and I'm playing, and I think that was tough for him. But we became pretty good buddies, and he saved me in the outfield so many times because he covered so much ground. Like, I'd always tell, remember Dustin Emerson played left field for me in midget ball. And Dustin was a pretty good hitter and a big kid, but didn't have a whole lot of range. So I told him, you need to play left field like I did, where I said, you need to catch the balls that come to you. And I said, you need Kyle Michalski to catch the balls that are in the gaps and the rest of the stuff. So, like, Donnie Capon, I'll always say, is the best center fielder I ever had. But, you know, guys around the diamond, like Gene McWillie was the nicest guy and probably the most ferocious pitcher next to Dean probably that I've ever seen when he's on the mound, because he was all business. But, like, he would never swear. If he missed a spot, he'd go farmer instead of, you know, the F word or whatever. He'd run after the game if he didn't think he had played good enough. He'd run miles after the game. He'd drop 30 or 40 pounds. Like, he threw just such a heavy, heavy ball. And, like, when I had to play against him when I joined the Rempel Brothers after coming back from New Zealand, I had a really good game against Dean in the first game back in May, and I was 5-for-5 and hit a home run in extra innings off him to score it. And, like, I thought, this guy's going to kill me, or he's going to hit me with the next pitch or whatever. And he come back and shook my hand and said, great game, Jimmy. Like, he'd never call me Jonesy. It was always Jimmy.
Yeah.
Great game, Jimmy, or whatever. Just an unbelievable man.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, we had such good guys, like Donnie Bates at that time. Didn't know me from the hole of ground, but Lynn and his wife at the time got to be really good friends.
Yeah.
So we were over there, Les Howe and Marion, we were over there, you know, talk about guys putting your arm around you and making you better just because they build confidence. And, you know, those were what I remember. But position-wise, Jay Sim was classic, probably the best receiver. To be able to catch Mick like he did, like in Waterloo, Ontario one year, Gene had thrown 3 or 4 to the backstop. The lights weren't good there, and he comes back and he's swearing like Jay always could. He always led the league in swearing, but he'd always say, he said, I'm sorry, guys. He said, those are drop balls that Gene's thrown over my head. Like, he was just throwing so hard and overthrowing it. That, but he was such a competitor that, you know, guys around the diamonds and stuff like that, the guys that hit you remembered, there's, you know, the guys that made it fun are the ones that I had. P.K. Clausen out of Winnipeg, like classic guy. I remember him running by our bench one time, and he goes, "Hey, Jonesy," and I go, "What, PK?" And he goes, "0 for 3, May, June, and July." You know, like you know, stuff like that that breaks you up and makes you remember the game. There's so many good players that, like, pitching-wise, I never was really great against lefties. Mike Pietnik was probably the toughest that I'd ever faced as a left-hander and a left-handed batter. You know, Mark Smith in his day was really good. There's, you know, those guys brought it really hard. But, you know, the guys that could bring it hard, like Jeff Boyce was such a good rise ball that he had, and I could hit change-ups pretty good. I batted with my bat back. So a lot of times I could still control myself on a ball and still hit really good. I remember Gordy Davidson. I don't know if you guys remember him from Asquith, but he ran the senior hockey team there and in Watrous, and he coached Bonanza Steakhouse. And we were playing Asquith with Outlook Junior Elks the 1 year, and we were playing them in their tournament, and we beat them in their own tournament a week before we go to national, 17-1. Mm-hmm. And Ralph Barrington was pitching. And anyways, Ralph's pitching really hard, and we're hitting him. Everything we hit was going in. And Gordy goes out to get the ball from him, and he drops the ball at Gordy's feet. Ooh. And Gordy says, "You're going to be picking that ball up." And he said, "You're going to hand it to me like a man," or he said, "You'll never play on this team again." And Ralph just walked to the bench. And he gets back to the line, and Gordy says, "Perfect." He said, "I'll pitch the rest of this if I have to." And Bob Stevenson says, "Gordy, we'll give you a pitcher." So we sought a pitcher in to do that. But, like, those are classics. You know, we played in Sheho, Canada, and the premier of Manitoba, Brian Pallister, is pitching.
Yeah.
And anyways, we're playing, and there's a rodeo going on outside the home run fence. And I was up to bat, and Pally throws one, and I hit one out, and it hits a horse in the rump out there. So somebody in the rodeo picks the ball up and throws the ball back into the left fielder and says, "Keep your damn balls on your own side of the diamond. It's got manure on it." One, the guy picks it up, and he says, "Hey, Pally," and he throws it back into Pallister, and he grabs it in his glove, and he's looking at it, and he goes, he said, "You're scaring the horses out here. Get the hell off the diamond."
So, Jim, I got to bring this up because Corey was down last weekend, came to the batting cage, and we had a few swings, and he actually talked about this part of your coaching resume. When you coached Corey with the junior team, you guys went to Vancouver training or whatever, and you talk about Pietnik. You had a hard time with him as a lefty. Corey is also a lefty. Corey mentioned that he had a really hard time hitting off of Pietnik, and you actually said to him, "What are you doing in there?" And it's ironic that you also had a hard time with him. So I think you know damn well what he's doing in there. He's struggling. That ball's going to hit you in the hip, and then it comes right across the plate.
First pitch I saw from Pietnik, I hit straight sideways at King Stadium in Kelowna, the first time I've been out there with cameras, and I hit Doug Arnett in the on-deck circle. And a year to the day, Patty did the same thing to me. His first at-bat off peaches, he drilled it right past my head.
That's funny you brought up Don Capon and how good of a base runner he is. Tosh, I might need your help. What year did we go to?
89.
With Don Capon? No.
What are you talking about?
When he was doing pop-up slides on the dance floor.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. No,
that would have been like 95, that 96, somewhere.
No, that was in, because Killer was playing too, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that Weird Cameras, that was like 92 in Charlottetown.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, Donnie, he's a good base runner, all right, but I saw him in the pub, and he could run bases in there too. Yeah, he was
just a great team guy.
Yeah,
he was an awesome team guy.
Yeah,
and you know what? It's funny. He always had time for the younger guys too. Like even when we were playing against.
He did.
You know, Rempel back in the day. Like it was awesome.
Yeah.
So Jim, we barely touched on your resume of how many nationals as a coach, as a player, your involvement in boards, your involvement in Softball Alberta. We talked a little bit. We're at an hour. Like it's already gone by. I don't know what else to say. A phenomenal, legendary guest. The funny thing is you talk about these guys that are the best you ever played with, and you're in all their sentences too, right? So really great to have you on this cast. Really appreciate your time. Really appreciate you in being involved with my group of guys for sure. Let's get into parting shots. And Jimmy, you can lead us off.
Well, I don't know what to say, you guys. I could talk ball like you guys can. It's like we're sitting in the beer gardens right now telling you about all of our best stories or whatever. I've played with some great guys. Like when I came back from Softball Alberta to run our family farm for 5 years. I call it my 5 years sabbatical cattle ranching. But I got to play with the guys that I grew up with. And you know what? Those 5 years were some of the best years of my my life. When you talk, Donnie, about running, is I come back and I would start to do the practices, and we did a lot more running. I said we have to get in more shape. And a good friend of mine, Lindsay Ogilvie, played outfield, and Lindsay was a big-time hitter. Carried a bit of extra weight and stuff, but left-handed-wise in intermediate men's, he'd hit him a mile. Anyways, he's out playing left field, whatever. We're all running or stuff, and he's down in left field, and he goes, "Hey, Jonesy," and I go, "What?" And he said, "Can we take a break here? I still got my winter front on." You know, and I'd never thought about it. That was just how I was taught to play. Like, I've had some great coaches, and I think a part of me coaching is all of those, and, like, 10 years in, and when I started coaching my kids, I got more enjoyment, you guys, out of coaching my kids and seeing them do well. I know, Dean, I watched you coach your daughter in Leduc at the junior women's, and I know, Tosh, you've coached your son. You know what, we've won Western Canadians. We had pickoff plays at second base when we were in Bantam that worked. I remember Dave LaFrance picking me off at second base one time with from break and clutch, and I go, "I got to put that in the bank. We're going to use it sometime." And, and, you know, I had Al Shenduck tell me at that time, he said, "You know what, Jim, there was 500 fans there watching that game and couldn't believe that play." And I said, "We practiced that play at every practice just for fun. We never thought we'd ever use it in an extra innings against Nanaimo. We pulled it off, and everything fell into place. We told the umpire the pickoff was coming. Ryan Friedrich went down to third base, and like there was going to be a bunt, the third baseman went right in. They put in a pinch runner with long hair that couldn't see anything. Coach was down to get a good lead. Johnny Boyle picked it off, pitch out, second base. You know, we go into bat, score a run, and win, and then we win that Westerns in Camrose. So, like, Peter Clark, Wayne Wallace, Reg Hauser that coached with me for years and coached with Donnie with Grand Prairie, and Greg Alexander, good friends of mine that put in time that didn't need to put the time in, but we had fun doing it. Like, it's, I have so many stories, you guys, they just come spilling out. I'm sure you guys do too. But, some of them you can tell, some of them you can't, but but they're still funny, I'll tell you. They seem like another lifetime ago, but...
Well, just with that, I mean, we're looking at you right here, and we're talking about putting a Legends team together here for the ISC.
Just tilt the camera down. Let's see how you're doing on the front there.
Yeah. Is your winter front still on?
I've actually taken some winter front off.
Good. You should probably take a few hacks, you know, get in shape there and get back into your hitting shape. And you know what?
Yeah, hitting was never a problem.
No, you can DP. You can DP for sure.
Jimmy, they got all sorts of really cool rules now. Like, I think only half the people actually have to run bases in Masters. Pitchers don't have to. I don't know if catchers have to.
Oh, man, I can't wait for Masters.
It's the greatest.
So, Dino, what do you got?
Well, I my parting shot is more, it's a little bit of a dig to Jimmy here. Like, I never had to face him, you know. Like, we kind of were wondering, have I ever pitched to you? I don't remember. And so the nice thing is he didn't really – take me yard, right? So that's usually I'm always thinking, okay,
I know where this is
always
going.
Take me yard. Well, I think we all know where it's going. I really appreciate
kid,
you teaching your kid all, you know, because now he's taking me yard. And I don't know, do you have any young, you know, daughters out there too that want to have a crack at taking me yard now too?
No. Dean? I remember telling Mark Smith one time he was doing a clinic, and I was at the clinic or whatever, and that was when you guys for Team Canada were playing in the Worlds in New Zealand.
Yeah.
And I said to Mark at the time, I said, "You know what, Mark? I honestly think Dean Holine is the best player in the world right now." And he said, "You know what? If he isn't, Jim, he's damn close."
Yeah.
Wow. And so that's the biggest compliment I can pay to you from people around, is that here's a kid from Saskatchewan, from a small town like me, that can make it and play in the world championships and dominate like that. Like, you think of the cities that are a million people, like Calgary and Edmonton and the rest of those people, and they haven't got somebody that's big. So kudos to you. And I think that we need to get boys' ball back on the map before it goes. So I love that you guys are doing the clinics, and even though that you probably don't get many boys at it, you still leave it open for boys and girls, which I think is fantastic. So.
Well, we are. We're working on something for next year. Like, you know, obviously COVID kind of put a wrinkle into things, but we did take that team to New Zealand. Dino and Razor took that boys team to New Zealand for a couple week tour. And there's, you know, we're constantly looking at that because, you know, that's where, you know, the game is the game, but we came up just like you and Donnie came up through the guys' side, and it's such a great game, especially, you know, at that senior A level. And this is no slight at all. There's some unbelievable games that we see now in our program, but, you know, back in the day when the top teams in the country were men's teams were squaring off, it's a different game. Everything's so much quicker. Everything's just more power, more everything, right? So, my turn?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Jimmy, I've never really asked you about this, and it's kind of a legend that I grew up with, and I think it came from Doug Arnett the first time. Yeah. And it was my first year in Camrose, an eager young guy, and I'm in the cage a lot, and I'm blistering up a little bit. Do you have a unique blister cure that I heard you did. I heard it was legendary, but I've never heard it out of your mouth. And by the smile I'm seeing right now, Doug Arnett was not lying to me. So what's your
Arnett and I played together in New Zealand and roomed together. And I think there was 10 days in November where it rained so hard in New Zealand. So we went to what we called the chipboard auditorium in Lower Hutt in New Zealand, and we'd pitched each other. And so he's pitching to me and I'm pitching to him or whatever. Well, we'd gotten these blisters like crazy. And anyways, I said, there's one way. Peter Clark told me that his dad told him that there was one way that you could get these blisters. And Moises Alou came out and said Felipe had done it later. Yeah. And he said that if you pee on your hands, he said those blisters will get salt on them and the rest of it. So anyways,
there
I said to Red. I said to Red, I said, and Doug, I said, don't miss.
That's so awesome. Hey, well, there it is. Because my first year in Camrose, Armpit was telling me all about this stuff, and he hates me to call Armpit, by the way. But
it's not a great nickname. He's
pretty tall guy. Better than Hubcap. That's like clank. Yeah, no kidding. But Jimmy, it was awesome having you on. You know, we drove up to Lloyd today for practice, obviously, but we knew this cast was going on, and we're really excited. I just think not only one of the best players, play the game, coach, all that stuff, but you're just a true gentleman of the game. You're such a good guy. You know, never a bad thing to say about you. I don't think anybody's ever said a bad thing about you. So, thanks for coming on the cast. Really appreciate you. And, you know, keep in mind, ISEs, legends. There you go.
I'll be watching.
Yeah. For mine, Jim, honestly, I'm going to talk about what you brought to our group. Obviously, I've known Corey. So here's a Corey Jones story that I have to bring up. We took Corey Jones to ISEs when he was 18. Geez, he might have been 17 for his first tournament, and he did really well, obviously. And we knew Corey was on the right track. And we ended up getting him in the beer gardens, and we made him sign a lifetime ISC contract. And so we still held him that. And man of his word, he's still playing with us. And but that's how I first met Jim, was through Corey, obviously. And the Dodgers turned to the Pirates. It was a tough thing for me, ego-wise, because it was my team turning into the Pirates. But I will say I learned more from you, Jim, coaching, and the calmness you brought to the group and the discipline you brought to the group that I'm hoping to kind of bring to my coaching, which I've started doing with these guys and in Lloyd here. And I can't thank you enough. You're a really big part of my ball career for sure. And I really thank you for everything you've done for me.
No, thank you guys for coaching. I always used to have a love-hate relationship with Masters teams, because I always used to say that those Masters teams guys would be the best guys to coach because they've played 20 years of fastball already. But I said the guys that love the game still play. I said, but the guys that love the game and still play and still coach, to me, those are the legends right there. So kudos to you guys in giving back. So
right on.
Thanks,
Jim. Right on.
So.
Thank you, Jim.
Say goodnight.
Thank you, guys.
Good night.
Thanks for listening to Tues Talk. New episodes weekly on Tuesdays. For more info, visit myloydminsternow.com or subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.